From time to time in my ministry, I have found myself behind bars. Bars that lock people in and restrict them, hold them back from doing all the things that they would otherwise choose to do. My first visit was as a young man and took me inside the walls of Attica 2 years before the Attica uprising. And whenever I have gone back, temporarily at least, to visit persons that I have come to know, to go back to lead worship for strangers, to go back to be part of a Christian community bringing words of hope and comfort and peace, it has been an almost unnerving experience. To be asked to fill out forms and to pull out my identification, to be patted down, to be put into an X-ray machine that can pick up even a Kleenex tucked inside a shirt pocket. To watch as the gates slide open and then slam shut again. To listen to doors being unlocked and relocked. It is a powerful reminder of those whose freedoms are curtailed for any number of reasons, and of all the ways, symbolically, that we find ourselves and our life hampered. The Apostle Paul, of course, was Christ's ambassador, traveling far and wide to spread the good news and to establish new congregations of believers. But at critical junctures in Paul's life, he too found himself behind bars. Even then, though, he barely slowed down, leading worship for the inmates, converting cellmates, writing letters of encouragement to friends on the outside. Paul's letter to the Philippians that we read in part a moment ago is one of those jailhouse letters. In typical fashion, Paul does not bemoan his fate, but seeks to use every ounce of energy and creativity to witness to the love and power of Jesus Christ in every circumstance, and to admonish his followers and readers to seek the same contentment that he has found. The words of Paul are valuable lessons for us, and surely we're familiar to the men and women of the Massachusetts Bay Colony who had survived a two-month crossing of the Atlantic Ocean, endured the harsh winter of New England, set about building a new settlement and planting crops, and now seek to celebrate their first harvest with a feast of thanksgiving. Like Paul, they knew both good times and bad. They took nothing for granted. They sought to return thanks to God no matter what, and handed down a tradition that we continue today, perhaps not looking exactly like the one on the screen before you, but in more familiar ways, families gathering or longing enviously. Perhaps we'll send that one home with Grady for what is to follow. But Norman Rockwell only gives us part of the picture, doesn't he? For there are other families who know how to gather and to bless their gathering and to give thanks to God. So we will pause on Thursday to thank God for all that we've been given and then some. How we do it is a matter of discussion around many family tables, I understand. Here is one possibility.
Okay, gang, here we go. Gobble, gobble. Bloop. It's a fine bird. Fine bird indeed, yes you are.
Are you talking to the food?
Well, yeah, I guess I was. But it's a fine bird.
Where is everyone?
Hey, let's go, dinner.
Stop touching me, David. Stop. Nate, stop. Stop.
Settle down. Well, here we are, family. Another year. Happy, healthy. It's good.
Excuse me.
Ted's monitoring from upstairs. I don't know if you can fast forward it, Ted.
Okay, gang, here we go. Gobble, gobble. Bloop. Ah, it's a fine bird. A fine bird indeed. Yes, you are.
Are you talking to the food?
Well, yeah, I guess I was. But it's a fine bird.
Where is everyone?
Hey, let's go, dinner!
Stop touching me, David. Stop! Nate, stop. Stop!
Settle down. Well, here we are, family. Another year. Happy, healthy. It's good.
Excuse me.
What?
So, before we eat, and I know we don't normally do this, but why don't we go around the table and just say 5 or 6 things that we're thankful for this year, okay? What?
You know what? I think I'll start. What I'm thankful for this year is a great family, credit cards, the house, nice clothes, Neiman Marcus and Nordstrom's. Oh, cars that work. What? What's so funny?
Nothing, nothing. I was just thinking more meaningful things.
Meaningful things.
Kids, what about you? 5 or 6 things. Go ahead. Okay, I'll go. Family, cars, and HDTV. Yeah, babe. Peace on Earth, in the Middle East. I'm thankful for our galaxy. Kids?
Can we eat now?
Come on, guys, we can do this. 5 or 6 things that we're thankful for. I mean, it's not that hard.
Just video think games, of violence, the band Cradle of Filth, techno, distraction, piracy, and the internet.
Good. Those are good things to be thankful for. Darcy?
Can we eat if I do it?
After David goes.
God. Green beans, red stuff, rolls, mashed potatoes, stuffing.
Well done, David.
Okay, I'm thankful for, like, the fact that God lets us live and breathe, and He gives us beautiful lives, and art, and relationships, and even though we don't deserve it, He showers His mercy on us year after year. Even though we ignore Him, He takes care of us. He loves us. And also the car and the stuff and the whatever.
Amen. Okay, well, let's eat.
And I'm thankful for Sophie, making sure that we got through that. So like many of you, I will pause on Thanksgiving Day with loved ones, and we will say grace together, saying thank you to God for the gifts that lay before us and the gifts that we can name beyond that. And then the next morning comes Black Friday. Somehow, everything that we have been grateful for the day before, all that has proved to us to be sufficient for every need, apparently is not. And so the shopping carts get revved up, ready to roll. People line the aisles, filling them, and the checkout counters And above all, I don't know what it is, but it's on sale. I must have it. Clearly, there's something wrong. Clearly, there's a gap between what happens on Thursday and what goes down on Friday. It is not a physical or medical condition. It is a spiritual one. If it were a physical or medical problem, we would have found a cure for it by now. Just like all the other miracle cures that have been promoted and sold to us. Snake oil elixirs, penicillin, aspirin, the nameless generic miracle cure. But as Dean Koontz, the contemporary writer, points out, the world is full of broken people. Splints, casts, miracle drugs, and time can't mend fractured hearts, wounded minds, torn spirits. Something else is needed, something that St. Paul wrote about nearly 2,000 years ago from a jail cell. I have learned to be content in all situations. I have learned what it means to have plenty and to have little, and to be content and thankful no matter what. So the question is, how do you and I learn that? How do we find our way towards contentment? Contentment, and the computer here is not working well with me this morning, but contentment is not, as this picture shows, the fulfillment of what you want, but the realization of how much we have already, which is exactly what Paul wrote about, that contentment and thanksgiving go hand in hand. At the heart of contentment is the spirit and practice of thanksgiving. Thankfulness is good medicine for our lives. Are you lonely? Thankfulness moves us beyond ourselves into relationship with God and with others. Are you sad? Thankfulness plugs us into the source of joy and hope that goes beyond all human measure. Are you anxious or driven in life? Thankfulness slows us down to name what it is that we already have and for which we are grateful. Are you hard-hearted or cold-hearted? Thankfulness softens us and warms us up to the goodness of life around us. Are you desperate or frightened or worried? Thankfulness is the medicine that cures our soul. Some of you know that I spent the first part of this week visiting my dad in New Hampshire. My dad has been ailing now for about 2 months. Went to the hospital first and has been in and out of hospitals and rehab centers ever since. Has not set foot back in his own home for over 2 months. His body has been failing, as has his mind. The conversations we've had by phone with him over that period of time have been interesting, to say the least. Before all this occurred, he was diagnosed with early dementia, which you can guess about the loopiness and the looniness of some of what we have heard from him in these past 2 months. I went to be with him no matter what, and to see for myself what might be happening. To my great joy and surprise and delight, I discovered that somehow God's healing was beginning to take effect. So a man who had fallen in weight in the course of 3 weeks from 149 pounds to 124, raising all kinds of red flags about whether that weight loss could ever be stymied, was suddenly eating again. And a man who could not carry on a conversation and could not remember what he had just moments before been talking about suddenly was conversant and asking appropriate questions for further information. I found myself in the course of my visit at the beginning of the week expressing thanks to God for what I was experiencing. I was grateful that my dad's mental faculties had been restored enough that we could sit and play cribbage together. But not enough that I couldn't still beat him. I was grateful that my dad's physical strength was beginning to be restored and that he could reach down now and tie his own shoe without tumbling out of the wheelchair on his head. I was grateful when the psychiatrist came to check him out to make sure that he was absolutely on target and understood where he was and what was going on around him. When she asked the question, "How many children do you have?" having just been introduced to me as his oldest son, his answer to her was zero. She had a concerned look on her face, and I smiled broadly. Because she asked, "How many children do you have?" looking at Vern and Jean, who got married 10 years ago, and together have zero children, individually have 5 and 2. But the psychiatrist asked, "How many do you have?" And I realized that my dad was beginning to listen sharply to questions and answer appropriately and playfully, and I rejoiced and I gave thanks. Contemporary writer Melody Beattie has put together her staying on Thanksgiving. Gratitude, she says, unlocks the fullness of life. It turns what we have into enough and more. It turns denial into acceptance, chaos into order, confusion to clarity. It can turn a meal into a feast, a house into a home, a stranger into a friend. And hundreds of years ago, the German mystic and theologian Meister Eckhart said something similar when he wrote, "If the only prayer you said in your whole life was, 'Thank you,' that would suffice." This morning we have a chance as a congregation to say thank you in many ways. We have said it in song, we have said it in prayer. We will say it downstairs in a few moments as we stuff Thanksgiving bags for strangers who will soon be friends. And we have a chance as a congregation at this moment to bring forward our commitments to support the work of God through this congregation in the year coming. In your bulletin, you will have found a card inviting you to make a financial commitment as well as a commitment of time and energy to the work of Christ through University Church in the coming year. During our offering time, rather than our ushers collecting your offering, I'm going to ask that the plates be brought forward and placed here on the communion table, and that the folks, as the choir sings, you may come forward to place both your offering and your commitment card for the coming year. If someone nearby you has difficulty coming forward on their own, I invite you either to assist them or to offer to carry their gift and their card on their behalf. However we come, let us do so with the simple prayer, "Thank you."